The button. Let's do my get my stopwatch rolling here. It's Phil Parr coming into your homes or wherever you happen to be and doing another little blind like me. I just finished a big breakfast. I have my two nieces, Beth and Tori, are here, 9 and 4 years old. We kept them last night, so they helped in the breakfast preparation. In other words, breakfast that could have been done in 15 minutes took 45. Only kidding. They can't hear me, so I can say that because they can't hear me. Anyway, it's Phil Parr and Blind Like Me, and Al Robbins is with us. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, and how about yourself?
Doing fine. They call you Al, not Alan. Al is
either one. Doesn't matter. I don't really have a preference. So whatever you're most comfortable with is fine.
Well, you signed your email, Al, and Al and I have never met, but we're going to rectify that little problem in about 2.5 weeks. We won't be able to say that.
Yes, we are, and I got to say. My wife, Terry, and I are both looking very forward to that little Houston get-together. And there for a while, it looked like it was going to be kind of dicey whether it was going to happen. But, you know, you folks have seemed to work out the details, and looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I found another hotel that would accommodate 50 blind people. Actually, we have... I think 43 at last count booked. I think 43 paid. I can't remember. And there'll be a few last minute stragglers that'll call next week and say, "Hey, is it all right if he sends you a check?" And sure it is. Go ahead and send me a registration check and get in. Yeah, and it'll be a good group. We have a nice group of folks. And let me just say that we're not really teaching anything. You won't be asked to buy anything or any Amway or pots and pans or groceries or anything. We're just going to have a party for 2 days.
Well, there we go. That's good.
That's what we're going to do. If y'all like
excellent.
If you think you might like that kind of activity, we'll come on down. Anyway, let's get to your talk with you about your life. Where are you? Where's your home?
Actually, my wife and I reside in upstate New York, a little city called Gloversville. It is about 45 miles northwest of the state capital in Albany. And actually, what I had learned not too long ago and kind of going through some of the list archives and like that, I see that there's another gentleman that's going to attend the outing there, Lee Stone. And he lives, actually, I believe, in Hudson, New York.
Well, I don't think he's coming to the outing.
Oh, he's not? Okay.
He hasn't indicated that he is. He hasn't come to either one of the others, but he'd certainly be welcome. I think we'd all love to meet him. But, yeah, he lives up there close to you.
Yep. That's actually very just outside of Albany. I must have read something wrong because I thought that list of names that Jovina had sent out, I thought his name was on there, but I could have mixed it up with
it's not.
I was reading.
As far as I know, it's not. I'll look. Maybe we've maligned Lee and we shouldn't. Maybe he is coming. Hope he is. Do you know?
That'd be great.
How about Unadilla, New York? Do you know where that is?
No, actually, I don't.
I guess that's not close to you.
That does not ring a bell. Who's coming from there?
Well, nobody's coming from there. We just got a good friend there named Charles Reichardt, I believe is his name. And he's been on the Handyman Show half dozen times. That he and his wife bought an old house. It's almost a mansion or a castle, a huge old house. Mm-hmm. And he's been working when he can fixing it up. And so we've had him on several times. It's a big old house with a basement and everything, and he's been replacing timbers down in that basement. So we've talked to him a half dozen times. I knew he's from New York State. And, see. Dan Rossi went to school in New York, and he's going to be there.
Yeah, he's not too. He's down in Pennsylvania, which is
Pittsburgh.
On the border there. So he's not too far away.
But he's going to be there. He went to New York School for the Blind, whatever it's called, Batavia. Anyway, we'll talk to him about that. Is this where you've always been, up in upstate New York?
Yep, actually, I was born in Gloversville, and I have lived here all 50 years of my life. So, been right around here and traveled some and visited other places. Uh-huh. But in terms of, where I really hang my hat and call home, this has kind of been it.
Well, what is your level of vision at this time?
At the present time, I see a little bit of light and a little bit of shadow, and that's about it.
That's about all.
Yeah, that's about it.
But now, you and I haven't talked about this, but I gather that you at one time did you have good vision? Did you have drivable, usable vision at one time?
Well, let me kind of go back and
let's do that.
Do a little chronology here of what has kind of taken place. Growing up, I kind of did all the, the normal things, play with the kids outside, play baseball, ride bikes, skateboarding, ice skating, all the kind of stuff. And as a little kid, what I can remember really kind of struggling with was very, very nearsighted. I can remember my parents would take me back to the eye doctors probably once, sometimes twice a year, and have to get the prescription of my glasses changed. And, back at that time, they pretty much thought it was just a case of severe myopia. No, nothing else was suspected. So I was able to, go to school and carry on pretty much as anybody else would. A few visual challenges, but certainly nothing that precluded me from really enjoying day-to-day activities.
Uh-huh.
And then I got into my teen years, early teen years, and that's when could really start to notice things deteriorating. Very difficult to see at night, night blindness, uh-huh. that kind of started. Started to bump into a few things that all of a sudden you just didn't notice were there.
Yeah.
So the peripheral vision had started to kind of, wind down. And, you don't notice that when it's a little bit day-to-day, but when you start to look back over time, you kind of pick up on it.
Yeah, but as a 6 year, as a young child, as a 6 year, 7, 8 year old, your loss of vision was the furthest thing from your mind. You were running and stomping and playing and kicking the ball and having a big time with all the rest of the kids.
That's right.
And you could see the blackboard.
Yep. Yep.
That's always a big thing. These kids, poor kids, they can do all right and everything else, but they can't see that darn blackboard. But you could.
Right.
All right.
I didn't really start having really kind of struggles with that until I got into high school, and it was still doable, but I could notice that the contrast between the chalk and the board was starting to get a little more difficult to differentiate.
But public school all the way, never any talk of blind schools or any of that kind of thing.
No, not back at that stage.
Yeah.
Actually, my parents did end up when I got into, 10th grade, wasn't doing real well in school, and certainly I can't attribute that to vision. It was just due to lack of motivation. School just wasn't my thing. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't apply myself. So obviously grades were suffering, and I was basically just into hanging out and not doing a whole lot. So in my sophomore year, we had a local Catholic school, and my parents kind of thought, well, maybe, if we send him there, it'll kind of get him more on the straight and narrow, and maybe he'll focus a little bit more. And
were they Catholic, your parents?
Nope, they weren't Catholic. We were Protestant, uh-huh. But you know, this was a small school,
yeah.
And you know, provided a lot more structure and oversight than public school.
Uh-huh.
So they did send me there, and you know, that worked out okay. I still didn't you know, really thrive academically. It just school was just not my thing. So I barely got through school.
Yeah.
But it was actually when I was in this Catholic school, it was actually the name of it was Bishop Burke, that's when I turned the magic age of 16.
Uh-huh.
And you know what happens at 16.
Driver's license time.
That's the lifelong dream, yeah, of everybody.
Every kid.
So it's time to go down to the Department of Motor Vehicles and get that permit.
Yeah.
Well, went down there, and of course, you know, at this point, you know, I'm still able to see to get around, but we know that there's problems. Because actually, I should back up just a little bit.
Okay.
By when I was about 14 or 15, our local ophthalmologist kind of began to suspect there was a little more than just severe nearsightedness. So he actually referred us to Boston, to the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary,
uh-huh.
Specifically the Berman Gund Lab, which is a big place that kind of really specializes in retinal issues, uh-huh. Which is what they started to suspect may be going on.
Hmm.
So my parents and I made a few trips over to Boston. You know, to make a long story short, through a lot of tests and differential diagnosis and all that kind of stuff, they determined that I had a condition called retinitis pigmentosa.
Oh, boy.
So good old RP, as it's often referred to.
Yeah.
And once we knew what I had, they then kind of described what would be happening, and that, of course, was not a real pretty picture to listen to that when you're 14 or 15 years old.
No, I guess not. Yeah.
No. So that kind of made, when I turned 16, thinking, boy, I don't know if he's going to be able to see good enough to get that driver's license.
I didn't ask you, but do you have brothers and sisters? Do you have siblings?
Actually, yes, I do. I have one sister. She's about 8 years older than myself, and she actually lives around here, too.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So she was already gone, but she was already long since driving, had been driving a long time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yes.
So
yep.
you
yep.
knew before you turned 16 that there's may not happen, huh?
That's right. That it was going to be dicey whether I could see in that little machine down at DMV well enough to get the license. You know, I kind of thought about that for a long time. But as it turned out, I was able to see well enough in one eye. I had visual acuity well enough to get that permit.
What a deal.
So I was able to actually get it. And I did drive from, let's see, I got my license probably in 74, 75. And I was able to actually drive up until 1989, which is when I finally surrendered my driver's license. And as we weave through the years, we'll get to what happened with that.
So a good long you got to drive too. You got to drive all through high school, and so that was good, I guess.
Actually, it was very good. I had a lot of fun. I met up with a bunch of school friends, and back at that time we were into really building street rods and doing a lot of racing and all that kind of stuff. So I had a lot of fun. Got in a lot of trouble, but had a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I'm of the opinion that driver's licenses are issued too early. A third of the people we kill on the highway are between 16 and 20.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make any sense.
You drive with no fear or conscience at that age, let me tell you. When I think back now of some of the stunts that I pulled at that age, boy, woof, I don't know.
Well, you aren't mature enough to realize that a car is a lethal, deadly weapon.
That is correct.
You don't know that, but it is.
Right. And back then, we're talking back early to mid-70s, people didn't think that much at that age either. You know, the whole drinking and driving thing wasn't nearly as much of an issue as it is today. So, you know, people thought nothing of, you know, having a few beers while you're working on the cars and then you're out driving and, you know, all kinds of stuff, so...
Yeah, there's a lot more consciousness of those issues these days, and there should be.
Sure.
People have no business drinking and driving.
Nope. Absolutely not.
50% of the traffic accidents that happen involve alcohol. That's, you know, we need to stop that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That needs to change as a society. If we're going to move forward, we have to correct those things. Anyway, let's get back to Al Robbins and his high school days. Got out of high school. What'd you think?
Well, actually, it was very interesting because when I was attending Bishop Burke High School, I was in my junior year, and the local diocese decided, due to some funding and this and that, we are going to have to close the school. So that presented a real quandary because I still had a senior year to go. I had already transitioned out of the whole public school setting. And, you know, the last thing my parents wanted to think about was me getting back into public school.
Yeah.
So fortunately, I was not that many necessary credits shy of being able to get my high school diploma. So what the school offered was kind of an accelerated finish up during the summer type thing so that if you went over the summer, you could take really the core classes that you would need as a senior and pretty much finish up a year earlier than you had originally anticipated.
Really?
So instead of graduating in June of 75, I actually graduated in August of 74 at the age of 16.
Is that right? What a deal.
But, yeah, it was good, but, when I look back and look at my high school transcripts, how I got out of school with those grades, it's a miracle.
Because they wanted through with you. There was no point in keeping you back. There was no place
to
keep
you. That's probably about it, because the grades were not pretty. No, sir, they were not.
Yeah, I have. There are different opinions on that. I've got a granddaughter. That is, yep. I love her to death. She's 16 years old. She turned 17 in August. She's 17 years old, sees perfectly. I mean, sees 20/20, sees, normally. She can't read and write any better than I can.
Wow.
And is going to be a junior this year in Lufkin High School. And I swear she can't read much better than I can. She cannot read. She says she has dyslexia. She says she has this. She just was never taught to read. And yet she is moving through school at a normal pace. She's on track. She's a junior. She'll be a senior next year. She'll graduate, and she cannot read and write. My son can't read and write and graduated high school. So, you know, what do you do?
I don't know. I guess you take kind of an inventory and figure out what it is you're going to do from there.
Yeah, what did you think? 16 years old, graduated high school?
Well, 16, actually, at that age, I kind of thought I had the world by the tail.
Yes, sir.
Because now I'm out of school, and everybody else has got to go to school. I'm going to be able to get a job and have some money, and, everything is going to be great.
I can buy beer.
And I did, I've always been very industrious in terms of working. I mean, I started... having paper routes and like that back from the time I was 10 or 11 years old, and I shoveled and raked. And so, I mean, I've always been one that finds something to do and always work. So, when I got out of school, I did get a job. Actually, my dad had gotten me he had worked for a local oil company here in town, and he had gotten me a job on their maintenance crew. And so I basically went around and kept a lot of the various gas stations and like that up to date, you know, did the repair work and painting and some minor electrical stuff, you know, just basically keep them up to date and working well.
Yeah.
So I did that for quite a while. And, you know, then over the years, I had a variety of different jobs. You know, I would work in leather mills, and I would work at textile factories, and did a bunch of different stuff. And finally, you know, got to, I had a job at a local car wash for probably quite a while, probably a couple of years. And at that point, you know, I was, 18 or 19, and that's when I met my first wife.
Still living at home, you were?
I was still living at home, and up until, I think it was around 78 is when I got married for the first time. So, kind of moved on from there, and, you know, started a small family.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, my first wife, we kind of started talking about, you know, what's going to happen here down the road as this vision continues to get worse. You know, you're only going to be able to do certain jobs a certain amount of time.
That's right.
So we started talking about what are realistic options. And she mentioned college, and, you know, my response pretty much to that was,
I can guess.
Yeah, you can guess. But, I said, you know, we'll kind of give it a whirl and try. And kind of to make a long story short.
Well, don't try to make a long story short. We got plenty of time.
Oh, we got all kinds of time.
We got all kinds of time. Don't make a long story short. Go ahead.
All right. Well, we'll make a short story long. How's that?
Go ahead.
All right. So basically, I'm trying to think here. You know, I continued working in that car wash job for a while, and then I kind of got enrolled in a college here locally called Empire State College. And that's pretty much what a lot of people would refer to as a university without walls. It's kind of like where you go and meet with a college professor, and they give you a lot of different work to work on at home, and you do a lot of things from home while you're working.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you meet with them periodically and, you know, write a lot of papers and kind of develop a whole career program to pretty much get you to where you wanted to go.
Sounds good to me.
I didn't know where I wanted to go. So, you know, that's always when you start college, that's always the issue. You know, you pretty much, most people don't know what they want to do exactly when they start college.
Uh-huh.
So we kind of designed a general, more liberal arts type first couple of years, which is basically what college boils down to anyways. Your first couple of years are pretty much the same regardless of what direction you want to go in.
Yeah, English and the stuff that you the basics that you got to have.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
So what happened here was I started to take a course or two, and I quickly found out that if I'm going to do college, this degree of structure for me just isn't going to work because there were always reasons at home or at work why I didn't have time to get done what I needed to do before I went back and met with the professor. So I quickly learned that this, although this may be a great option for many people, for me it wasn't going to work.
Wasn't going to work.
Wasn't going to work.
All right.
So at this point, we weren't really sure what direction we were going to go. So let's see.
Now, was your wife working at all this time trying to help bring in money, or did you have children?
Yep. She actually was still working next door to the car wash where I had worked. She was actually working at a Kentucky Fried Chicken, which was where I had actually met her.
She was working next door to the car wash, so she'd keep an eye on you, boy. I know why she was working next door.
And
I was married to her sister at one time.
Well, there you go.
So
what happened at that point was kind of the first in a big career shift. Uh-huh. My parents had actually picked up a part-time job. Like I said, my dad had been working at this local oil company, and things were starting to go downhill there in terms of that business. And he and my mom got a part-time job with a local agency that worked with folks with developmental disabilities.
Uh-huh.
And what they would do is they would go to these homes in the city, and they would be what was called weekend parents. During the week, there was a regular set of live-in people that lived there and took care of about 10 developmentally disabled adults who attended a workshop during the day, and they came home at night and, you know, made supper and did stuff around the house and pretty much just needed some adult supervision to help them get through the day. So my parents took a job as what they called weekend parents, and they would go there on Friday night and get done on Sunday night. And one weekend they were working, they invited my first wife and I over for dinner. And I looked at my wife and I said, "You have got to be crazy. I'm not going over there." I said,
"Really? Why not?"
I had no idea back at that point in time of what, in my mind, what these people were very different. I was just very uneasy about being around them. And so I just had all kinds of problems with that.
Yeah.
But I went, and we went to a couple of dinners. And, things kind of seemed okay. And so then a situation came up, and there was an opportunity for other weekend parents to fill in at another home. And so my first wife said, "You know, do you want to try this?" And oh boy, I said, "I don't know. This really, I'm not really sure this is something I want to do." But you know, I tried it, and we did that for a while. And what ended up happening is we really ended up starting to like it, believe it or not. I mean, my wife always liked it, but, you know, I was kind of on the fence, but I really grew into the position and really started to like it. So what happened at that point was the home that we were filling in at, the regular live-in people wanted to move on, retire, not do that anymore, and so that position became available. And, you know, I was working part-time. I was working full-time at the car wash. My wife was at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and we kind of looked at this as something that may be pretty good. So we took the position.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, we had one child already, a daughter.
Okay.
And so the three of us actually, part of the deal with this, taking over this group home or living in this group home, part of the deal was there was an apartment right in the residence itself that you lived in, and the rest of the folks lived in the remainder of the house, and you just were there to help them out. And
okay,
so it was a great deal.
So this was your this apartment was your private space.
Private, yep.
Now you had to do their laundry. You had to, or did they do that themselves? Or
well, basically, you assisted them. You worked with them. You know, you provided some oversight. You.
Uh-huh.
help them with cooking dinner, and you help them with shopping, and they could do all this, but, you know, it's like with kids. They need a certain amount of direction, guidance, occasionally a little prodding or prompting, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
But they just required a bit of oversight. And the great deal with this was that you got a place to live that they didn't charge you for, and you got paid to do the job. So
And you got food.
And you got food. And so financially, this was a good deal.
Sure.
This worked out very, very well. And the real good part of it was, and how all this ties in with me in college, this is the connection, is that during the day, these folks would attend a sheltered workshop and work and earn a paycheck. And we had a few odds and ends that you would do during the day, but during the day was kind of your off time. You could do kind of pretty much what you wanted to do. So guess what I did?
Well, I hope you went to college.
That's what I did. I went to college. So instead of the unstructured route, I then began taking regular day classes. So basically what would happen is I would get up in the morning, help my wife get things ready at home. I would drive the guys down to work, come home, jump in the car and go to college, and then come home in the afternoon and jump back in the van and go down and pick them up, and you know, pretty much help them out during the evening.
All right.
And we did this for a number of years.
Long enough for you to get a degree?
Yeah, actually, yes. What ended up happening, we kept that job through the time that I got my bachelor's degree. So I got my local, my liberal arts two-year degree at a local college called Fulton Montgomery Community College.
Uh-huh.
And then I transferred to the State University, which is in Albany, to get my next 2 years. So basically, you know, I was going to school full time and working full time with obviously a tremendous amount of support, you know, from my wife, because, you know, she was certainly picking up some of the slack of what I wasn't able to do. But between the two of us, we did the job, were able to get me through school. And in fact, she was going to school some as well. So This really helped us out tremendously.
And she was home all day with the baby daughter.
Right. And at this point, you know, my daughter was starting to get to the age where she was going to start attending school and so on and so forth. So it really worked out well for all of us. It really was a good situation.
Sounds like it. All right.
Yep.
So we did this for a few years. You got a degree, and go ahead.
Well, what ended up happening was once I got done with my bachelor's degree, we kind of looked at what opportunities were available with that. And we soon found out that there were many more options available with a master's degree. And my four-year degree was in social work.
Yeah.
Kind of decided that regardless of what happened with my vision, which it was going downhill, regardless of what happened with that, social work would afford me the opportunity of really choosing a number of different career paths.
Well, sure, if you had a master's.
With or without vision.
If you had a master's.
Right. So I that's what I did. I continued on. I got my master's degree. And, you know, once I really started to apply myself in school, I did very well. Actually did very well going through college. And it really worked out well. The agency that we worked at was very supportive of me and going to school and of the whole family thing, of my visual issues. So it really worked out very well.
And you are still living in this home with these developmentally challenged children?
No. Nope. That ended at the point Boy, I got to start doing some thinking here. I haven't thought of this in a while.
Well, that's all right. We don't need to know the exact year, but you moved out. You left that home and did what?
Actually, we left that home, and what ended up happening is there were internships involved with getting my MSW.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what we ended up doing is we had, over the years, we had actually purchased a home in the city here that when the weekends would come, we would kind of go to our home instead of staying in the apartment at the residence. So we were slowly building our own home.
Okay.
So what ended up happening after the bachelor's degree is I was doing some internships at the agency I was working at, and a position opened up to actually get a counseling job
in
the agency. And that's how I made that transition from kind of living in, doing some parenting work with these folks, to getting a counseling job.
Is that right? Well, very good. Because those give you state benefits and pay well and...
Well, actually, it does give good benefits and pays well. It's not a state agency. It's a local not-for-profit agency. The name of it is Lexington Center. So it isn't actually a state job. But the company has been very, very good for me.
And tell us about, you said there was a story about you losing your driving privileges.
Well, right. Basically what ended up happening is when I had this internship down at Lexington, this was with a different population than we were living in and taking care of. The population we were taking care of were developmentally disabled.
Uh-huh.
The population I got a counseling job with were folks with a mental illness, which is a whole different arena than someone with a developmental disability.
Sure.
These are people that suffer with, like, depression, anxiety, thought disorders, things of that nature. So I had to get an internship that was doing something different than I was doing for a vocation. So I took this internship, and pretty soon a paid counseling job opened up in that position, and I took that. And then I was just about finishing up with my master's degree, and the person that ran the program, and this is 1989 now, he left, and that left the directorship of the program open, and I applied for that, and I got that position. And that was in May of 1989.
Even though you had, how long had you been working for these people?
I started working for this agency in June of 79.
And so you had
today,
you had 10 years with them.
That's correct.
And this is the same.
As we speak today, I'm still working for this agency.
This is the same agency that ran the home that you and your first wife lived in.
Correct.
So had you not taken that job, you would never have gotten the counseling job.
That's correct. That is correct.
It's funny how things work out, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
Absolutely.
It really is. So, basically, to kind of bring the rest of life up to the 1989 period, during that time, we also had a second child. My daughter Jennifer was born in 1980, and my son Alex was born in 1986. So I have two children by my first wife. And that relationship ended back probably around 91 or so, somewhere in that neighborhood. We actually decided that we would go our separate ways, And we've always stayed very close in terms of being able to see what's best for the children.
Yeah.
And she still lives in the area. It's a funny thing because actually she is now working back at the same agency that I'm at.
But you were able to get an amicable divorce.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I mean, to this date, we still get together, and you know, my present wife Terry and she get along very well, and we do mutual functions with the kids together. We've been away on trips together that involve the kids, so no, we get along very well. So there's no disharmony between us. It was amicable thing.
I've had one of each. I had a bad one, a divorce, and a good divorce. And
well, there you go.
The good one is much better. So your wife still lives there, and your kids are both grown now.
Kids are both growing. Yep. Actually, my daughter is 28. Always easy to remember her age because she was born in 1980.
So just like me, I was born in 1940.
Do the math real quick.
I was born in 1940, and I'll be 68. It's just easy to figure. Yeah. All right.
There you go.
So we have you as applying for the director's job of this agency, and you got it. They gave it to you.
And I got it. And basically, I have to say, you know, this is very interesting because when that position opened up, I had done a very good job as an intern in this program, you know, which was part of my college days. I had done a very good job organizing the department. The director at that time was a nice guy, but he was not organized.
Yeah.
And I'm somewhat probably a little more on the side of a little more anal retentive.
I know.
So
I know
organization is very important to me. So one of the things I had done as part of this internship is I had really organized the entire department and really brought things up to code and regulation and a lot of uniformity and really mm-hmm. done a lot of good things, which he was very happy with because it's not something he liked to do and it's something I love.
Yeah.
So when he left, I basically went to the administration and said, you know, basically, here is what I can offer you. This is what I believe I can do with this department, with this program. This is kind of a plan. This is what I want to do this. And you pretty much decide whether I'm the person you want doing it.
And they said yes.
Yeah, they said yes.
Now, so, do you have to raise money? Are you involved in that at all or not?
No, I don't. In my present position as director of this outpatient mental health program, I don't have to raise money. I do have to oversee everything about the department. You know, I have to manage the budget, hire people, provide clinical supervision to the clinical staff, pretty much run the entire program. Yep.
All right, now, at 89, when you got the director's job, you still had pretty good vision, and you were still driving the car.
Yeah, my vision, my hope was that I could drive until I got my master's degree. And that was in May of 1989 is actually when I got my master's degree. And it was very shortly thereafter that the story comes up of why I gave up my license. Mm-hmm. I was at work one day, and part of being down at work, they have what is called an emergency response team, a code response in case there might be a fight or an altercation in the building, some behavioral issue, or there might be a medical issue.
Uh-huh.
And they have a code team. And as working there, everyone kind of takes a turn being a part of this code team. So it was my turn to be on this code team this one day. And there was some issue in the building. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was a code called. And basically, you had to get out there pretty quick. So, uh-huh. you know, I went out the one set of doors at the program I run, and it's within the same building, so I had to go through another set of doors, and I started kind of running pretty quickly towards the where the problem was, and another counselor from a different unit was coming out of a door that I was passing that was on my left, and of course, part of the RP thing, you know, is the decreasing peripheral vision and the whole field of vision.
Uh-huh.
So I'm moving at a pretty good clip, and she came out of that door, and I never saw her, and I mean, I really hit her hard and sent her flying. Fortunately, she was not hurt, not injured. She was pretty shaken up because, you know, pretty much be like, playing football, except you don't know you're in a tackle football game, and all of a sudden somebody broadsides you. That night I came home, and, I said to my wife, I said, you know, that's it. I'm done driving. Here's the keys. That was the last time I drove.
Drove home that night and gave her the keys.
And that was it. I said, I'm done. Because, you know, what I was thinking is, you know, this could have been some kid stepping off a sidewalk. It could have been a kid riding his bike. It could have been anything. And it could have disastrous, life-changing results for that person and for me. And I just, you know, you kind of live in denial. As I look back on this, I think the last few years I was driving, I was almost driving on memory. You know, I can tell you where every stop sign and traffic light and every issue back at that point in the city was. And I think to a greater degree, I was just driving on memory.
I'll be darned.
You just take things so for granted, but that really opened my eyes. So that's one of two really what I call life-changing moments in life. And we'll get to the second one in a little bit.
Well, you might hurry. We're about, let's see. We got about 9 minutes.
How many minutes?
We've got about 9 minutes. We're 46 minutes in here, and so we usually do about 55 minutes. So we got about 9 minutes. You got a story to tell.
Well, I guess then I have to go back to my original statement to make a long story short.
Yes, we got to.
Let me just summarize the rest of the stuff here.
That'll be great.
Yeah. Basically, at the same agency that I was at after I broke up with my first wife, I met a friend at work who actually worked for me. I had hired her in one of the clinical positions at work, and she had had some struggles in life, and of course we had kind of become good friends, and she would share issues with me that was going on with her, and I would with her, and so kind of to make a long story short, we started seeing each other, which eventually gets to the point that somebody's got to make a decision, because you really can't be working together. One is a boss, one is a worker, and be seeing each other too. That just doesn't work out well.
I know, being in radio all these years, how well I know.
No matter how hard you try,
you can't do it.
You can't do it. Terry ended up getting a different job, and we ended up getting married back in October of 94. So we just celebrated our 14th wedding anniversary on the 1st of October.
Yeah.
And she's been a great support and help to me through time. But I continue to still be in this job. I'm still the director of this program, it's great. The other piece that I wanted to get to quickly.
All right.
And boy, we've missed so much. This should be a 2-hour show, but it's not. But anyways, the other part that happened, the other defining moment, was probably about 4 years ago while I was at work. I was walking through the building, still not using a cane or anything at this time, although I probably should have been for quite some time. But I ended up walking into one of the patients of the program, unbeknownst to them, knocked them over. And if you've ever been to a bowling alley and you've heard someone who isn't real gracious the way they let the ball go, and that ball kind of hits the bowling alley and it sounds really horrible.
That's what this sounded like.
Well, that's the way their head sounded when it hit the floor.
Oh, my heavens. Oh.
And I said, oh, no. Fortunately, again, there were no major issues or whatever. But what that led to was me saying, okay, you really need to start using a cane. I got some mobility training.
Yes, sir.
All kinds of stuff. You know, started getting introduced to the adaptive software for the computers and, you know, have just basically taken on the technology and learn to get around, and there's so much more that we could get into, but time is certainly not going to.
But you're doing this job, and you're basically totally blind.
Yeah, at this point, you might just as well say yes. I see light and shadows, but that's really it.
But if somebody walks into a room and they don't say anything, you don't know who they are.
That is correct.
You can't recognize a face. Doing everything. If somebody speaks to you, you have to recognize their voice before you know who they are.
Yes.
Now, you have an office and a secretary, and
I have an office. I don't have a specific secretary. I have someone that will provide me with some assistance if I need it.
Some sighted assistance, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll help me out. The agency has really been fantastic in working with me in terms of providing whatever I need to get the job done. And I do get the job done. They're very happy with the work I do. So it's really worked out very well.
What do you have? Are you the only blind person there?
Yes. I'm the only blind person there. So.
Have you thought about hiring any other blind people? Are there any positions there other blind people could fill?
Sure. If I had a clinician leave or something, a blind person could do that job. There's actually a number of jobs in the agency. The program I work for is a very small part of the agency. This is a huge agency. It employs about 1,400 people.
Really?
And the program I run is just a very small little niche within the agency. There's several programs this agency runs. But I certainly would have no problem with hiring someone with a visual problem.
Well, you might look into that. You might get a hold of the state agency and find somebody who could come in that you could. But you're basically, what you handle is mentally challenged people.
Yeah, people with like I say, anxiety, depression, thought disorders. We provide a lot of group and individual therapy. We get them hooked up with things that get their life back on track. I have a couple of psychiatrists that work with me. So we have a whole treatment team I oversee, and we basically just help people with a variety of different mental illnesses recover to the point they can get back into their day-to-day routine and lead as successful of a life
as possible. Do you do counseling yourself, or do you just supervise the counselors?
Nope, I do some myself as well. Yep.
How many people are in your department?
I supervise five full-time and about three part-time people. And, the people that are enrolled in the program that attend at different points in time, there's about 50-some patients that are enrolled in the program that attend various times and schedules during the week.
Now, when you counsel with someone, do you have to write a report on your meeting with that person?
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of documentation I have to do, so I use the computer. I use, Microsoft Word and Excel and all those programs.
How did you do it before we got computers, was my question.
How did I do?
Like in the 90s.
Well, back,
When we didn't have computers, how did you write a report?
By hand. Back at that point, I could still see well enough to do that. So the transition worked out very nicely.
So computers came along just in time for you, didn't they, big boy?
Yeah.
That is so great. See, that's just so nice. Computers didn't level the playing field, but without them, this day and time, you couldn't do your job.
No. Without the technology right now, I would not be doing the job. I couldn't. Absolutely couldn't.
Well, you and I have talked now for 55 minutes.
Wow.
It didn't seem like it to you, did it? It went by pretty quick.
It seems like we've been talking for about 10 minutes.
55 minutes we've talked. Good story.
Wow.
Good inspirational story. I'm looking forward to meeting the both of you in Houston. We'll go sit down and have some nachos and a cold beer. What do you think?
That sounds like a plan to me.
Al Robbins from upstate New York. Thank you, sir. Hang on just a minute, all right?
I will do that.
All right, Al Robbins. Good story. Good, as far as I'm concerned, kind of an inspirational story of something that if you are losing your eyesight or you have lost your eyesight and you think that this is the end of the line, well, it's not. You can have many, many things you can do as a blind person. You can have a good, happy, fulfilled life if you want one. There are many sighted people who don't. There are many blind people who don't. But I, for one, have had ups and downs and financial problems and women problems and, you know, kid problems. But basically, my life has been very good. I have a few regrets, and we'll talk about those someday. Anyway, come join us in Houston. Email me, and I'll tell you all about it. My email address is philparr, just philparr, at consolidated.net. philparr, consolidated.net. Phone number 936-634-9500 if you want to call. Come see us in Houston. We'll be there Friday, October 24th, Saturday the 25th, Sunday the 26th, and we'll head home on the 27th. But a big two-day gathering party. We're not going to try to teach anybody anything or sell you any Amway or preach to you. We're just going to sing and play and do some radio shows. Come see us. Phil Park, consolidated.net. We'll do this again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.